human form that told me and was speaking to my mind and my ideas about myself, that in the concept of being someone, I was willing to surrender at the master's feet. And that was just amazing.
You gave up the baggage of John.
Yeah, again, just on the website, I had wrote in my journal, this is the culmination of my little spiritual journey through AA and all this sort of stuff. I've had my spiritual awakening and felt this presence, and this is it. I'm going to India to meet that presence, which is God as I understand God, and absolutely surrender everything there at the master's feet. And then the mind couldn't say, oh, you know, this isn't true, because here's the master saying, this is true. This is the only reality.
It's a little bit interesting. I read this book, Sailor Bob. You might have heard of him, but he said the exact same thing, pretty much the exact same thing when he met Nisargadatta. All he had to do was see it in the flesh, and then that's what all it took. So.
Yeah. Because otherwise the mind will sit there and bite a little bit. Oh, you know, oh, you're crazy. You don't know what you're doing. You've read these books. You're just imagining this presence is not real. You're going to offend God. Even I told you when I went there, I had the Rudraksh beads because I felt, you know, I read the books and it said that these Rudraksh beads, the 17 mukti, the 14 mukti, all this sort of stuff would enhance and reflect the presence more strongly. So I had the concept that these beads were helping me to channel that amazing presence. And then when I went to Maharaj after the mantra, I removed the beads. That was one of the very first things. Remove the beads, cut the hair, no support. Whatever's going to happen has happened. Master is now responsible for my life. And remove everything. And then when the food poisoning came, it was after I had removed the beads, mind bit again and said, ah, see, look at that. You remove the beads. You've now offended this God, and you're going the wrong way. So what did I do? Instead of allowing this to bother my beingness, I went to Maharaj, as you're supposed to do, and asked for the doubt. Master, I have this doubt because I got the food poisoning. I feel sick, as you know. And I believe when, if I put these beads back on, I will be bound to this concept of these beads and everything is a waste. So, and he said, absolutely, this is you, no support. You are the support. It's formless support. You are not body. You were not body. You're not going to remain the body. Be firm, be strong, be fearless. And then going through the whole food poisoning thing, being very, very, very sick, but no longer the mind biting about these stupid beads. Not stupid, I'm sorry, I don't want to disrespect the beads, but about these beads, I did not put them back on. And going to the hospital, then, what was my support? I don't have my beads for support or anything like this. So mantra. Mantra is my support. When in times of trouble and being driven to the hospital in a foreign country and not knowing other than the doctor saying I had to go to a hospital because I was dehydrating and all this sort of stuff, and I'd been sick for days. Mantra, mantra, mantra. Because there was no material support. You know, like Master talks about the crutches. Okay, when I went to India, I had the Rudraksh, I had the long hair, all these. I had the crutches because I could not yet stand on my own 2 feet. Master took those crutches and threw them away and said, you don't need these crutches. You can stand on your own 2 feet. You take one step, I'll take the next step. And now, if I come back, you know, when I came back from India, actually people were shocked when I came back from India, because they thought, the people at my work thought I'd come back like Moses with a big staff, and because I went over there with long hair and all this stuff, and so I come back with a staff and long, you know, white robe or something, and I came back normal, like quote unquote. As Maharaj says, we don't dress any differently, nothing. For them, okay, in India, they dress as the India does, and in America, dress just as America does. Don't put on the whole, you know, the whatever you call them, those things, the special shirts and the, you know, all, you don't need this, because all that is doing is just decorating the body. And if I decorate the body, then the spiritual ego comes back. And this was another thing that I learned about spiritual ego, because when I was in the line going to India, I had the special shirt, the kurta, that's what it's called, the kurta, and the red rocks beads and the long hair. And people were like, oh, hello, you know, they thought, oh, I'm and I, my spiritual ego at that time was like, yes, I'm enlightened, going to see my guru. Come. And coming back from India, it was funny, because all that was removed, and my passport even had the long hair and the beard and all this. So I no longer looked like the guy in the passport. I was just, you know, clean shaven, short hair. And I came back in a regular America type look, and have done that ever since. And before going to India, even in the group that I mentioned, you know, at work, yeah, I was wearing the kurtas, the long hair, the rudraksh. Of course, they couldn't say anything, because it's, quote, the religious freedom or whatever. But that was the spiritual ego building more and more and more, because I look like a spiritual man. I look like somebody who is on the path to enlightenment. And that is only just spiritual ego, and ego in itself, an identification with a body form. And Maharaj just removed all of that.
I'm curious, has anybody that you like talk about at work or about this stuff taken up any kind of serious interest?
I mean, at my work now, of course, we're working from home, but when I was at the job, I have pictures of the ashram and pictures of Maharaj, but again, not out in the open and all that. I have like a little cubby in my cubicle. So there's like a little wooden thing there, and that's where I have the pictures of the master and the ashram and all of those things. People, if they do ask, I'll tell them about it. Many people know I went to India. A lot of people think I'm a much nicer guy, having gone to India, more calm, more relaxed, you know, not trying to be, because I'm not trying to take anything from the world anymore. You know, I do my job, I do my duties, I do everything to the best of my ability. I'm not a lapdog for attention. Because why? You know, I'm not trying to undercut any of my associates. If somebody does a great job, I'll say, oh, great job. Because I don't have the ego of, oh, if he's doing a great job, I must be doing a terrible job. No, because those things are gone. I don't take the touch of the world. Now, I will say, in other circles, yeah, people will still talk. People will ask questions. Matter of fact, I was on the phone with someone just before this meeting, and I told him, I said, oh, we have to stop talking spirituality here on the phone, because in 2 minutes, I have to get on this Zoom call and talk spirituality. So, you know, so those kind of things happen. But it's all because there's not taking anything to touch, you know, nothing serious, scenes coming and going, and there you are.
So could we say the guy, the person, John Richards is dead? Metaphorically.
John is dead?
You can't say that the John Richards is dead, because John Richards is just a concept. John Richards is a bundle of memories and that can be called on at will, but aren't sticky. Like, of course, if somebody says, oh, hey, John, I don't say, oh, no, I'm the formless presence. I still answer to John. And if my boss asks me, hey, remember when we did that project 3 years ago? Yeah, okay, it's called to memory. And yes, this is the project we did 3 years ago. It's not like it's blank. There's not really any thinking about anything. So there's not this continuation of John or the need to continue to make John continue. It's just here formlessly that, you know, there's not like a planning of, oh, what about John's life or anything. And yet, like we talk about, okay, you know, go see the doctor, take medicine for my heart. I do that. When the fridge is empty, I go get food. I do shopping for my son for Christmas and stuff. I bought him a little dirt bike and some clothes and stuff. So I was very much in that moment doing those things. So, but it's not like, oh, I can't, like Maharaj says, it's not, oh, I'm a spiritual man. Or my son asks for something, I say, oh, no, son, you see, you don't need any material possessions. He's going to be like, Dad, what?
Your dad is dead.
Yeah, your dad is dead.
No, there is no, can we say, like, no sense of doership in the day-to-day activities. Yes, things are being done. Whatever has to be happen according to the natural flow.
Yeah. Spontaneous action in the moment. Every single thing is pick up the water, drink it, put it down.
See, for, you know, outside the eyes of Rami, there is an entity called John. So that's water has, it has to can drink. That's it. For the John, it's happened. That's it. The moment of water, you know, taking inside to the body.
But see, there's but no John unless there's a Rami. If there's no Rami, then there's no John. Mm-hmm. It's just speaking and listening are happening through these different body forms by the same formless presence that's animating both.
So there is no fuss about it.
Yeah, no. I mean, again, if there's the person of Rami, then Rami sees other people. But if Rami is knowing I'm formless presence, there's nothing.
No separation.
Yeah, then it's just, there's words coming out and words coming in to the ears, coming out the mouth. But it's the same presence. And so automatically then there's no concept. And that's why the whole sense of individuality is the barrier. That's the imaginary barrier, because the individual, how can this individual be God? How can this individual be Brahman? No, this individual is not. Mm-hmm. The individual is an imagination caused by identification with a body that I am somebody else, but you're not a body and you're not somebody else. You're nobody or everybody, whichever you want to see.
I had a sense today that all the body and my experience is all only in the realm of possibility, whereas the my true reality is the formlessness, and that's actual, and all the experience is possible.
That's... Well, all the experiences that you're having, even the experience that you exist, is within the bubble of illusion or the consciousness. You've never done anything outside of consciousness. It's like the fish in the fishbowl. The fish may swim a lot and go all kinds of places, but he's still within the fishbowl. And the same with us as these body forms. We're just appearances within consciousness. Everything we've ever done, everything we've ever known, everything we've ever experienced has been within the consciousness or the waking dream, rather than the sleeping dream. When you go down and you sleep at night, everything that's occurring within that dream is absolutely within the dream. Even if you may dream that you've traveled to India on a plane and met all these people and even met the master. And yet that's all happening within the dream. When you wake up, it's finished. The same is here. It's the same consciousness in dream that's in waking state. So in this dream, you're having a dream that you're this person in this world, and all your experiences, all your relations, everything that came along with the body is within the consciousness or the bubble of illusion. That's why Maharaj talks about get out of the circle of illusory concepts. The circle of illusory concepts is I'm someone seeking spirituality. I'm someone who needs to be formless. Sometimes I know myself as formless, sometimes I do not. But all of that thinking and all of that experiencing is within the consciousness and is not true.
That's why we don't really know what's possibly going to happen next, but we know that we are.
Yeah, anything, if you're thinking about next, you're projecting through imagination. And see, before, you might have been trapped in that. It's scary not to know what's happening next if you're holding on to the concept of
it's also relaxing
that can happen to. Well, if you're holding on to the concept of a body that things can happen to, the pleasure and pain principle are immediately activated, so that if you walk outside, you want to sort of, oh, if I go outside, I'll go to my car, I'll do this, I'll do that. And you'll project. And then inside this mental thought process, you'll be projecting what you believe the future is going to be. And therefore, you'll feel calm and satisfied, as you just said. Oh, when I understand what's going to happen next, I feel at ease. I feel a sense of security. Mm. Now, what happens, the mind will guess 50% of the time, but you in a human form, as a human being with a mind, ego, intellect, will just blame someone else on why it didn't go the way it should have gone. And the way it should have gone was just a mind-created projection. And when it doesn't go the way of the mind-created projection, that's when you become irritated and look for someone who is the cause of this happening. And all of that's just nonsense.
It all starts with the assumption that something is a certain way or something. Or
it starts with the assumption that you're somebody else.
That you know something.
You're nothing. You're formless nothingness. And you know this through meditation. You know this. And then even opening the eyes, and you don't have to keep reminding yourself that you're formless nothingness, because then that's a whole thought stream going. You just remain with your selfless self.
You know, sir, this, how do we recognize that blankness, or you know, that beingness is me? Like, you know, yes, Master said that you are identified with the body, mind, but in fact, in actuality, you are the formless presence. That's what Maharaj told. And to unveil that, you do the meditation. Now the challenge comes with this beingness is there, but how it can be recognized that is I. This beingness is I. See, when one starts hanging on to the things, to the thoughts, then what one can see is just beingness. It is always there, but generally being occupied with the thoughts, you know, whatever is happening in the very moment, the activities, body. But when that is subsided, that beingness is not, it is reflecting as it is, not no longer with any other content. Now, how could it be recognized that I am that presence. Am I making sense?
Yes. You're asking that when I'm in meditation, I feel that just I. I feel that I am or that I exist, presence. And how do I know that that's what I am? And I go deeper and deeper and deeper in that selfless self. And I think it's Nisargadatta Maharaj that says, remain with that I am, and all the secrets will be known. Because this is there. There is something definitely, this subtle sense, just I. Nothing. And that's where the mind is, you're prior to mind, so that kind of just stops everything. So now if you're not body, and now you're experiencing yourself without body, you just remain with that sense of presence. And like a black hole, it pulls you in. You're removed from body, from world. Automatically, you know I'm not body, and that just clicks the world off, turns the world off. So then there might be some thoughts, but yet there's still a subtle just I behind the thoughts. Then the thoughts will cease as you're remaining with your selfless self. Just this. You open your eyes and you see, but you're seeing from that place that you are. This is all there is. There is nothing else. And the only reason is because of the concept of duality that you can even know yourself. And this is so, it's so deep, you just, that's it. Remain there. All your questions will be answered without answering or asking a question. Maharaj talks about the inner master working, and you're inquiring, but not with words. You're just remaining with yourself, the self. There's no thought about separation because there's no thought. It's just a deep, and it takes you in. Just spend some time with yourself. And now, because you're meditating in duality, spending time with yourself, you can start walking around, even with this just I, and you're opening your eyes. Maybe that's the first step. You're remaining with your selfless self, but still looking around. There's nothing to witness because there's no thought of the witnessing, witnesser, and all that three-prong thing. I'm witnessing something. No, that's not there. And then you start moving around and doing things, but you remain with your selfless self. Thank you.
John, there's a little bit of good news. Sandra, who used to come to all our meetings, has said she's interested in, she sleeps during the day, so probably won't be able to be on the call, but she wants to be back on the mailing list to receive the recordings.
Okay, good, good.
Yeah, so that's good news. And good. And the other thing is, we're not constrained by the 8 o'clock tonight because the meeting that Trish and I go to was last night instead of tonight.
Okay.
Sounds good. Whatever.
One more good news.
Well, as long as we're talking about other things for a moment, there's a song that came to my mind today. And I'll leave it out there if you'd like to hear a really great song with great lyrics. There's this band called Straubs. They were a 70s progressive rock band. And the song is called Just Love. And it's got really great lyrics that sort of could be inspired by like Enlightened Mind. And it's just a really great song too. It starts out real peppy and then it goes into like this flowing part, but it's just a really good, so if you want to look it up and listen to it on YouTube, I would say it's a good song to hear. It's Straubs, Straubs, Just Love. I'd be interested in hearing your reaction next week or whatever. In the one line that I kept going through my head today was, "It's just love. Don't try to understand it."
John, I was curious how long you were with Mantra and whether that just kind of fell away of its own accord and what that, I don't know what that process was like.
Even sometimes now, Mantra, because Mantra is running all the time, you can sort of just listen to it running through this body. There are also times where, depending on what's going on, it might, you know, the concentration might go to it. So I would say it's continuous, and attention is sometimes on this mantra and sometimes not. And depending on what is perhaps, like, it's not the way it was of sitting for meditation. There's nothing like this. It's just, you hear it naturally with breathing. Sometimes, like before I go to bed at night, I bow to each of the masters, Raja Adhiraj, Sakurunath, Sri Grilingam, Maharaj Kijay, all the way through to the masters that I have their picture. And then I put my head on the pillow where Maharaj, the image of Maharaj is. And sometimes I will, just for a brief moment, just remain with the mantra there at the forefront of my attention. Then I bow. Now I read like one chapter of Das Bodh and then go to sleep. Sometimes I was reading different, little bit of Maharaj, different books, and then go to sleep. And in the morning, then I usually wake up. I'm like, oh, good morning, Master. I'll bow to the images. And there will be times sometimes where I'll come out, and when I'm making the tea, start just reciting mantra. So it just happens spontaneously at different moments.
Okay. Spontaneous like everything else.
Yeah.
Just like spontaneous presence.
Yes. It's just, you know, whatever is in different moments. Just like when I walk into the kitchen, I have pictures of Maharaj here and here and on the refrigerator. So every so often, not all the time, but every so often, like I'll just bow like to the master, or I go to get something out of the refrigerator, I get it. I go, I maybe pour something, and when I'm bringing it back to the fridge, oh, you know, just, but it's spontaneous. There's no like, no thought process of doing it, and no, am I doing it too much? Do I look ridiculous doing it? Or, you know, is this really, you know, am I doing this like just because? It's just, it's just spontaneous in the moment. And a lot of times too, like, you know, when different things are occurring and I'm really, really grateful, I'll make an extra effort then to bow to Master and say, thank you, Master, thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, just like if, just different things, whether it's a financial thing or whether it's something at work or, you know, because a lot of times when you're just in the moment and you're not there with your own self, you're remaining with your selfless self. So you're not projecting this little self and this little self's life. The work and the quality of work is really amazing sometimes. Like you're amazed at what has just happened. And in that moment, I say, thank you, Master. Thank you. Even such things as looking in the cabinet and there's food. Because prior to, you know, not even just 10 years ago, I was really in a bad shape. And there wasn't a lot of food in the house, and there wasn't always money, and I was always in trouble. And so now, when I see the food in the cabinets, it's, oh, thank you, Master, thank you. Or, you know, just little things. Going out and seeing my car, I'll walk outside to the car, pick up the mail, I'll see the car, look and see if it needs washing or whatever. Because now in quarantine, I don't really drive the car a lot, but I'll see it. Oh, thank you, Master. Wow. You know, these are the things that, and yeah, they're material things, you know? And the truth is there's not an attachment to them, but since they're there, I have great gratitude. You know, Master is working in my life in everything, in every moment. All my needs are provided for in the moment, because I don't have this mind that's sitting there saying, I want, I want, I want, or I need, I need, I need. There's just a seeing that all these needs are being met spontaneously in the moment, and then devotion to the Master is how it's directed. Thank you, Master.
That's been occurring for me as well, and not from like you said that perfectly, like it's just not because I believe that thanking the Master is going to get Jordan, you know, what he thinks he wants, but just out of sheer gratitude that I found the end of what I can feel is the end of my search, that like that feverish pitch is over. Like I can pick up a book, I pick up Selfless Self at night, and I'm not, there's no addictive quality to like, that I think the book's going to get something, because there's a Ramakant every other line saying, well, read the reader. Like,
yes,
like we're done with books, Jordan. Like, you know, and it was really cool how you said that. Cause if someone were to observe me at same at night, I, you know, I bow down and pray and you know, it was a series of things, but a lot of it involves Ramakant finding this path. And that happened spontaneously too. And I never in my, like, if you asked me a few years ago, would I ever get on my knees and pray? Like, that, it would have been this, like, no way, but it's more, I like that. It's spontaneous. It doesn't have a set of rules. It feels natural. Just like you said, like the way things are kind of unfolding. I just wanted to put that out there just as a form of my own gratitude too, that this, it's just an amazing feeling to be a part of this in any way. It's the, I can just feel that it's the solution. It's the truth.
You know, saying is reminding about one thing. Actually, when this spiritual journey started, so they said, like, maybe you start generally, you know, either of these things, either as a devotion you start this journey, or as a like a knowledge discrimination, with, you know, like you start seeing what is you or what is not you. So with that niti, so that's kalpnana. So devotion, that's a devotion bhakti. So eventually one may start in jnana, and that this journey will be completed with the bhakti, you know. So if you see all the masters, maybe, you know, their journey one way or other, they might be very devotional to their guru or this thing. Eventually, when they are leading the day-to-day life, right, so they might be very discriminative. If you take Jai Krishnamurti, he was very devotional master, everything like that he used to say in the starting. And then, but when this journey completed, he became completely like a jnani. So the way he was teaching. So Ramana Maharshi, so his journey has started. Maybe I'm making up things, but generally if you see, this devotion and the discrimination are like wings. So even, yeah, so that's why this sampradaya, this path called bird path. So one wing is the discrimination and the other one is the devotion. So life, our day-to-day life, right? So, and so even though if we try to tackle that, the problems with the discrimination, that energy is not sufficient. It's like, you know, crossing an Amazon, you know, by holding onto the tail of a dog. It's impossible. So like this ocean of samsara. So then devotion is required. That comes, you know, that submission, you know, gives the energy or takes care of the day-to-day challenges.
Well, and I think it was Nisargadatta who mentioned, you know, our sampradaya, the Inchagiri Namnath sampradaya.
Yes.
It's that threefold path of bhakti, jnana, and then the other one too. There's something else. There was a, because it has the bhajans, it has the, but he talks about it in I Am That, that it's like a, it's the, mm-hmm. the royal road is what he calls it, because it combines all these three very necessary things for the spirituality. And yeah, I'm sorry?
I think the third one is action. It's a devoted action, sort of like the path that Mother Teresa followed, which is sort of a karmic, you know, it's action.
Karma.
Okay. Yeah, karma. But a good karma.
Yeah. Hey, good karma means action without any sense of doership.
Yeah.
So,
right.
So
yeah. Selfless service kind of.
Right.
Yes. You know, sir, John, like why this one is remembered is, you know, maybe like, you know, that knowledge is reflecting that you are that, you know, presence. But day-to-day life is very tricky that, you know, one way or other way, this egoistic sense come that, okay, at least, you know, as me, all the time it happens, okay. When this devotion is there, right, to the master, right, to that teacher, that inner master, that you are the doer, then it's easy to, you know, undergo whatever that situation would be, like how tricky that would be, how difficult it would be, how pompous that would be. Otherwise, you know, I'm lost in that, like, okay, I got, you know, some good praise from my boss or somebody's, you know, scolding me.
And again, in meditation, when you remain with your selfless self, mm-hmm. then you don't take the touch of this. And if you like, if you are taking the touch to this, mm-hmm. anytime my mm-hmm. boss praises me, like I said, it's thank you, master. You know, it, literally, I understand that this body form is an empty husk, basically, and that its presence.
Empty husk, what does?
An empty husk, like there's just a
shell.
It's a shell. It's there's nothing here. Yeah. This presence is all around and everything. And also remember too, it's not just this body. This is experiencing through your own experience that's being projected. You're the projector. And the more that you're devoting to selfless self and bowing to the masters and all these things, like Maharaj says, you're creating this in your own experience, because you won't have this, oh, I'm so great a guy. Because if you have this, I'm a great guy, then you can also have, oh, they say very bad things about me. I'm very depressed. Maybe I need to change the way I am. No, you're formless. And the whole concept of people saying good things or bad things are there only for you to reinforce your formlessness. Because if a thought comes, oh, I'm a very great guy, No. And it can be good to devote this thought to master. Thank you, master. And Maharaj does the same thing when he talks about, you know, I'm speaking like this only because of my master. And he says, Nisargadatta Maharaj never took any ego. He never said, oh, I'm very great master. No, I am here because of my master. And yes, as Kathleen said, I'm inside my master. And my master is inside me. There's no separation. So everything is devoted to the master. Everything, any praise I get, it's only because of master. And master is formless master. You're able to direct your devotion towards the pictures of Maharaj in form, but Maharaj is, that's why the most amazing, when Maharaj left the body, and the first thought came, oh, now he's become everything. No, now that everything is no longer in the limited experience of Maharaj, for me, for him, it was never limited. He understood himself completely. But understanding that, okay, you can't travel to India because you're in America. Right now we're locked down. We can't even really travel around our own neighborhood. But Maharaj is here. So if I say, thank you, master, Maharaj is just the same as he's sitting right here. Maharaj is everywhere. When I put my head on the pillow and I bow down, I'm bowing to my master's feet before taking sleep. And then, you know, reading a little bit of Das Bodh. And again, it may sound silly, but Das Bodh, I know, a sacred book. I read this. It's very nice, very good. And I bow to Das Bodh, put it on the table, again, because Maharaj's picture is next to the bed, bow to Maharaj and go to sleep. And therefore, no egoistic type thing could happen. There's no anything. After this whole little speaking, most likely, thank you, master, because it's his words, not mine. John Richards, as a John Richards, doesn't know anything about anything, really. You know, nothing like thinking about what to say and how it's being said and all this. A lot of times I watch the videos afterwards and I'm just like, I don't even, like, I'm not connecting with the person on the screen as that being words coming from this, as you said, this concept of John Richards, because it's just not there.
I was never really wanted to be too concerned about taking credit or blaming, but you know, it kind of automatically happens, especially the blaming part happens automatically. But yeah, so if you don't take credit, blame ends up losing its some of its validity too. And then it just, I can't help but contrast that with like the leader of a certain country is so much all based on credit and blame. You know, that's all it is.
Like, well, and see, it's like, if I make the coffee as devotion to my master and present it to you, and you say, I don't like this coffee, then it has no effect. I didn't make it for you. You understand? I made it out of devotion. But I didn't, like, everything I do is spontaneous activity. It's spontaneous action. So if somebody says, you know, oh, this coffee is just terrible. Okay, sorry. Maybe you want some edge, more sugar, whatever. I don't take this personally.
Don't drink it.
Because I'm not trying to sit there and say, oh, Rami, I made this coffee and you are going to love this coffee. And then I sit back, I wait for your reaction. And if you're not so happy, I'm disappointed. Oh, he doesn't like the coffee. I'm bad. Because again, I'm here. I'm somebody. And I need justification from outside things. No, there's no such thing as this. Absolutely formless, with no thought of a doer or any deeds being done. And if, as you said, well, I got caught up in a deed being done, my boss said, you know what, Rami? You are the best thing since sliced cheese. We love you. Thank you, Master. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Master. Thank you, Master. Boss comes and says, Rami, you're the worst thing. You know, you've got one more day to shape up or you're out. And you sit at your desk and you say, okay, Master. My thoughts are being bothered by this. Let me keep on track. I am not body. I was not body. I'm not going to remain the body. I cannot be fired. I cannot be burned. I cannot die. I'm absolutely formless. Let me just do what needs doing in the moment and leave it. That's it. And now it's 8:16. So...
okay.
We have come to the other end.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you so much. So thank you, everyone. Have a good weekend.
Okay, everybody. See you next time.
See you.